Hello and welcome to In the Art Scene podcast, an art podcast that has it all. I'm your host, Galina Marquez, and I invite fascinating people to talk about their personal creative journeys, success stories, and inspiration. We talk about art business and marketing, how to find your creative voice, and all the new trends in the art world, like NFT, AI, and such. Join me and my guest for today's conversation. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to In the Art Scene podcast. I am having a special guest from the other side of the globe today, Tanya Malkin from Australia, a wonderful photographer and a total enigma for me because I know very little about her. And when I went to her website, I mean, her Instagram is mind-blowing. Don't get me wrong, but the website currently says that it's private. So there's no information about her story or her inspiration. So let's talk about that. Hi, Tanya, and thank you for being with us. I know it's very, very late at night in your place. I mean, we're recording. It's 9 a.m. in California, and it's past 1 a.m. in Australia. It is so amazing. I'm so grateful for you for doing this at this unhumanly hour. I cannot imagine being up that late. Anyway, thank you so much. Please introduce yourself.
So I'm Tanya. I've been photographing for around 30 years.
Wow.
I guess. About probably more. If I include my high school years. My preferred genre is aerial photography. I do landscapes from the ground. I'm also an artist. I'm trained in fine art and art history. And I specialized, well, I majored in oil painting and photography. So at university. So yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, your aerial photographs are something. I have no idea how you do this, and I hope that you will tell us how you do this. But they look almost like veins. Like, can you guys imagine? And I will try to describe it, but you will just have to go to her Instagram and look for yourself. Can you imagine the landscape from the bird eye view? And there's like lagoons and sands in the ocean, and every single vein under the absolutely clear blue water is just painted like with a tiny little brush. It's so detailed and it's so intricate. It's just, first of all, I don't even know how one is able to find the views like that. Because, I mean, yeah. Are you a pilot? You're going to be a pilot?
I wish. No, actually, I don't wish, because then I wouldn't be able to photograph. But I wish that I could fly myself to scout areas before I go to the expense of flying. So I spend a lot of time researching the areas that I fly. I use satellite imaging software that they use for mapping, and it's GIS software, which is like the geo imaging software that they use mostly for things like mining and mapping. And so I spend a lot of time researching and a lot of time on that, just flying around
virtually
on the software.
Yeah,
looking for places that I would like to go. I also use solar prediction software so that if it's an area that I'm unfamiliar with, I can estimate the light angles and where the light's going to be hitting at that time of day and what angle it's going to be and where it's coming from. So And most of my flights I'll plan sort of 12 months in advance. I don't just jump in the sky and go, let's go flying this weekend. yeah, so that's basically my planning process. And yeah, and then depending on what I want to shoot, whether it's the desert or plains, I have an obsession with the coast. We have such a diverse coastline in Australia. The colours, depending on where you are, I'm in the Northern Territory, so the Northern Territory coast is very different to, say, the coast of Western Australia, and the east coast of Australia, which is very densely populated. So I kind of try to steer away from people as much as possible. In almost everything I do, but particularly, I try to be in areas where there's no footprint, basically, of people. Yeah, and then I try and find a pilot and try and find a way to get there that's as cost effective as possible. In Australia, it costs around $1,600 Australian dollars per hour to fly. I live in an area which is probably 200 to 300 kilometers from the coast, and it's nearly 200 kilometers, which I guess is about 100 miles from the nearest town. So I live in a place that only has about 55 people, and one shop and one petrol station. So, wow. Yeah, so the distances are quite, it's quite a big distance. So I try and get myself as close to the area I want to fly as possible, where there's an airfield or a helicopter base. And then I choose my time. We don't have golden hour where I live, and mostly where I fly, we have golden 25 minutes. So
you have a very, very short
day. Oh my God. The sun drops very quickly.
I have so many questions. Oh my God.
So that gives me a very small window. It also gives me a very small window to get back to base. So usually I'm looking at around 40 minutes fly time before I get to a site that I want to photograph. So I kind of have to try and juggle the right time of day with a lot of what I do is tidal. So with the right tide at the right time of day, with enough time to get back to base. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh my, well, okay. So I love having guests who are geeking so much on their art, but I have so many questions. Like, there's no way in the world I would be doing such an extent. Like, I mean, hanging out on the software, researching some pretty area, you know, from the satellite is one thing, but then calculating the light angle, making sure that you are catching the right tide at the right time of day, traveling that far, and then flying with the pilot. It's like, oh my goodness, every shot must be just golden. I mean, the time, the effort, the cost that you personally put in this. Well, okay, I have a very short question. Why aren't you using drones? Why does it have to be a pilot with the aircraft or helicopter? Yeah.
So I don't know about overseas, but in Australia, drones have a maximum fly height legally of about 500 feet, and most of my shots are taken at around 3,000 feet. And then also a lot of the areas that I photograph are not accessible by land. They're not accessible by boat. Like if you had a boat, then you would get bogged and stuck there because of the tides, because we have the areas that I usually photograph are between 8 and 12 meter tides on the big tides. So if you were to say, for example, get a boat, you'd probably spend a day or two in the boat to get to the site, and then the distance for the drone, and then you wouldn't be able to, well, I wouldn't be able to fly high enough, so that most of the areas in my photographs sort of are, you know, around a kilometre's worth of expanse. They're not micro details, so it's sometimes an area of probably 2 or 3 square kilometres that I'm capturing from around 3,000 feet. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Now I have to ask you the question, how on earth did you come up with this, and how, when did you become so obsessed that you went into so much length of, you know, doing like a year of research and then going into this whole travel to like, how many shots do you do of one area? I mean, probably as many as you can, right?
Not as many as I would like, probably. Most of the time I get home and think, why didn't I see that while I was flying? So I usually, you know, cost-wise and planning-wise, and then really I only get for an area, a particular site, I only get about 2 good days a year that I would fly it. So I really only do probably 4 or 5 flights a year, and I would fly over a particular area, usually try to get at least an hour and half, an hour at least fly time over a site, and then it's usually between 30 and 45 minutes getting to the site. So usually my bookings are around 3 hours flying, and yeah, and I guess when I was young, I loved photography. It was my obsession from a very young age. And there was a photographer that was based where I lived, but he was quite renowned for his aerial photography. And this was sort of back in the 80s and 90s, so a very long time ago. And his name, for anyone that wants to look him up, is Richard Waldendorp, and he's based in Western Australia. And his images were amazing. And I remember being sort of maybe 13 or 14 and seeing one of his books for the first time. And I just wanted to touch his photographs, you know, when there's artwork that you just want to dive into and immerse yourself in. And that was the impact that his images had on me. And then I guess when I, you know, I finished school and studied art, and then realised that I couldn't have a mortgage as an artist. So I went and worked in a corporate job, and my job meant that I had to fly a lot around a couple of big areas most days of the week, and I would sit with my face planted against the window. I'd get very cranky if I didn't get a window seat, because I would be looking out the window the whole flight trying to work out where it was on a map so that I could mark it as a spot to go back to. And then I had my first aerial flight was in a tiger moth, which is one of those open air old World War II planes.
Wow.
You know, the ones with 2 wings and you wear the goggles and the helmet. And from that point I was obsessed. So I photograph from the ground. I find myself photographing less and less landscapes from the ground. I'm a bit of a light snob. I don't usually, I tell myself off, but I've become very fussy with what I photograph, as I get older and more obsessed with the aerial photography. That's basically.
Wow.
Did that answer?
Yeah, well, that's a great answer. It's like, wow. Wow. That's a quite expensive obsession. But I guess it's worth it because your work is absolutely beautiful. It's just stunning, and knowing how much goes into it makes it even more special. It's amazing. I have a question. So you're mostly like based in Australia and flying around Australia, and yes, you have wonderful coasts and everything. Have you ever tried or thought, or maybe you're planning for the future to go in different parts of Earth? To photograph. Yeah.
I have 100,000 spots that I have GPS points for all over the place. And I think there's still places in Australia that I haven't done that I want to do yet. I've been to Iceland and with a good friend of mine, and we photographed the braided rivers together, which we went to Iceland specifically to do. We ate 2-minute noodles for 10 days so that we could afford to spend every single cent we could on flying, we literally ate a cup of soup and 2-minute noodles for 10 days.
Wow.
But we flew, and we flew a lot, and we got some good fly time in, and we got some good images. I would absolutely love to go back there. There's some places I would love to photograph around New Zealand and Greenland and the west coast of Africa. I've got a lot. Death Valley in the USA and mm-hmm. Places around. Yeah, I've got to remember them all. I can't remember all the names. Or places around the can't think. Anyway, I have got places around the USA and Greenland and Alaska, and there's lots of places that I have on my to-do list. And I guess being an artist, I don't have a rich benefactor.
I wonder why. What is wrong with this world? Come on.
I know. Where are all these rich benefactors that all of the guys talk about?
Wow. We are on record, and if you make yourself if you find yourself in the U.S. in California, I live in San Diego, which is a drive distance from Death Valley, and we actually have a lot of private little planes and lots of little kind of airfields over here. So, if you find yourself in California, you have a place to stay, and I'll help you to find the pilot. So at least one of them will help you check the box, okay? So yes.
Thanks.
Oh my goodness. Come on, people. This woman deserves to have a private pilot who takes her everywhere in the world because her photos really, really worth jet. It. It's wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, In the Art Scene listeners, I just wanted to say a quick thank you for all the support you've given me in the past year. It means more than you know. Every donation through Buy Me a Coffee and every purchase of swag helps me keep up with the production and put out a new episode every week. And I certainly appreciate if you will keep doing it. But I also feel that if you like the show this much, you deserve a little more than just a thank you. This is why I launched a Patreon page. There will be monthly live Q&As, exclusive content, and for the hardcore fans, I got some swag and keepsakes. I love this community that we are building together, and by joining my Patreon, you will help me create more content for you. Go to patreon.com/inthe-art-scene and join today. Okay. So my next question, though, this doesn't just go on the shelf, right? You show somewhere your work.
Yeah, I try to show. It's been a bit hard with COVID and all of that kind of stuff. And I think, like, this year things just seem to be recovering. So I've had, I don't know, 5 or 6. I've got an exhibition running at the moment, so I think it's my 6th solo. And then I've been in a joint exhibition in Shanghai, and so I mean, it's always nice to see your work printed, and I like to print big.
I imagine it.
Nice to see your work printed big and the detail that's in it. On beautiful paper. Yeah.
You know what? I see it on the metallic surface. This will just shine on the metallic surface. Oh my goodness. It's just gonna be with the right spotlight, it will be just magical.
Yeah. I've started to lean towards the cotton rags at the moment, the beautiful, rich, textured art paper. It just gives the color saturation and the depth such beautiful, beautiful depth and beautiful detail and beautiful color. I have printed, there's some images that I print on metallic, but my current exhibition is all on cotton rag, and it looks beautiful. The colors are beautiful, and it just really gives it a beautiful, deep feel to it.
Wow. Well, okay. I just can't get over. Just tell me that. Put me at ease. Tell me that your exhibitions are selling out, please.
I had a couple of sellouts.
Oh, good.
I had a couple of sellouts, and I sold I've had a couple of sellouts. This one's a bit slow. It's the wrong time of year. I'm in the Northern Territory, and we're just coming off our wet season. So, there's not a lot of people around out and about. It's hot. It's stinking hot. But I've sold a few, so I'm not absolutely not disappointed. I'm hoping to have a series of exhibitions at the end of the year. I got the regional Fuji GFX grant for the Asia Pacific region. So I'm about to start shooting for that. I've just got to lock in my dates. I'm being a little bit fussy with tights. I just need to lock in my dates. Then I'll be having a series of exhibitions at the end of the year, and hopefully that will be with medium format camera with the Fuji GFX. So, I can't wait to get those and get those done big for that exhibition. And these ones are all big. I shoot in a different style to most when I'm up. I panorama, I stitch most of my images. They're not single frame images, so that I get like really incredible detail, and they can sort of be, I think the biggest I printed was 6 meters out of a shot file. So they look great big.
6 meters for you guys to understand. I think it's about 7 yards for the United States listeners.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I'm not very good with my imperial conversion.
I'm still getting used to it myself.
600 centimeters?
I grew up with metric. I just know that a yard is 10 centimeters shorter than a meter. Anyway. So it's about 7 feet for you guys. Yeah. Oh, so 7 yards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. 7 yards. Goodness, that's huge.
Yeah, it looked amazing. It was 6 meters by 2 meters. Yeah.
Wow. And 2 meters is about 2.5 yards. And forgive the rough estimates, but yeah, I'm not calculating very, very well right now. It's 9 a.m. for me. So yeah. Wow, it's big.
I don't calculate well at any time. So calculator.
Anyway, I can link a calculator in the show notes so you guys can check this out. Yeah. But yeah, it's, oh my God, that's a lot. It's a beauty. It sounds like I see it with my inner eye, like a huge long panoramic print. It's just, wow. Amazing. That's amazing. You know, I'm talking to you and I feel like I'm flying over there, and you have this backdrop behind you. And I feel like I am in this little plane from the World War II with my goggles on, looking at all those beautiful areas. Just amazing. But you mentioned also that you are a painter.
Yeah, I paint. Yeah, and I'm a ceramicist as well.
And a ceramicist.
Yeah.
Well, can we you know, switch the topic and talk a little bit about that part of your art process?
Well, art school beat the love of painting out of me.
Really? What art school was that? So we'll tell everybody not to go there.
Yeah, well, I didn't like painting what I didn't want to paint and what didn't inspire me. I hated the drills. So, I love oils. I love the texture and I love the way it reflects the light and I love the smell of them. So
what do you paint?
I paint landscapes. I've kind of shifted from oils to watercolors a little bit now. So and I use the watercolors in a very much an oil kind of way. So I think any traditional watercolor artist would tell me off and smack me across my knuckles with the paintbrushes. for not following the rules. I was the only person in art school that needed to wear an apron because in my opinion, it's no fun unless you get dirty. So
I'm with you. I'm totally with you on that.
I'm not a throw it at the wall kind of painter, but I paint with brush, but my brush strokes are by no means flat and tidy. So, I used to also love the oil pastels, the crayons. Mm-hmm. So I paint very much in the style that I would have used an oil pastel. And I use my watercolors in the same way that I would have used an oil pastel.
I am so curious. I haven't seen this kind of work on your Instagram. I would really love for you to send me some. Yeah, if you can send me some, and I can put it in the show notes so people will kind of have an idea.
Yeah, sure.
This will be something interesting. It's like, to me, it almost sounds like it's almost like Van Gogh style expressionism with watercolor, which is absolutely.
I love the impressions. They're my guys. I'm like the biggest, well, not the biggest probably, but I love the impressionists, like the impressionist movement, the Australian impressionist movement, which, you know, we kind of created our own little impressionist movement. But I love the great impressionists. That's my kind of art. The light, the way that they use color to reflect the light is just, that's my thing. And my watercolors, I'll use the watercolors in a traditional way to put the base down, and then I will put the details in with watercolor pencils. So, you know, I love my crayon de chaise
Now I understand. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, if Karanda Shay knew how I abuse their pencils, they probably wouldn't be happy. But that's the way I do it. And that I think just because I just love oils so much and I love the oil pastels and so I've kind of created my own little rules for the watercolors and how I do things with that. And also watercolors are very portable. I can go out and if I can't photograph, I can use the watercolors, and I've got my giant pencil case full of my Caran d'Ache's and my paintbrushes, and that usually come everywhere with me. So yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So actually the reason I asked you what kind of style of painting you like, because at least here in the States, the style of your photography kind of reflects some trends in the semi-abstract painting that is popular here in the States. So this coastal colors, this kind of oblong shapes, brush strokes. So it kind of from the distance looks like you are looking at the coast from the top, but it's abstract painting. So I was wondering if you were trying to do something like that with your painting, but obviously you don't, which I think is amazing, because why, you can do it in your beautiful photographs.
Yeah. Oh, I try to do it with my photographs. So I'm by no means a Photoshop professional, and I try to chase the natural light. So, again, I'm a bit of a light snob. If the light's not doing it for me, I don't usually get my camera out. So I'm sorry for all the people that say practice your craft every day because I kind of do. I'm very much a light snob, and if the light's not hitting it right, if I see a place, a beautiful vista, and I think to myself, that would make an incredible photograph, I will keep going back 100 times until I get the perfect light. I think it's that kind of, as well as getting a good image at the end, it's the actual process for me in creating the image is finding a spot, a beautiful vista that's going to be photogenic, and then working out when that good time is going to be, if it's in the morning, if it's in the afternoon, or if it's 40 minutes after the sun goes down. And then it's actually going back and back and back and back and back and back until I'm finally happy with the image. Like I love soft light. I don't know whether you have it over there, but I call it the afterglow, where the sun goes down and then about 20 minutes later, there's this pop of beautiful soft color and beautiful soft light where everything just glows naturally. And that's my favorite. If I'm photographing from the ground, that's my favorite light. I can't do that from the sky because you can't fly a helicopter, mm-hmm. After sunlight, after last light. So, certainly if I'm photographing a landscape from the ground, then that's the light that I wait for. Yeah.
I don't know actually if we have anything like this over here. So for you, since you understand a lot of, how geography and latitudes and everything. So I think San Diego is the latitude 33. So we are not that far away from the equator. our days are kind of short, and our nights are kind of like, I mean, there's not much difference between the winter and the summer, in terms of the length of day. And we have absolutely, on the West Coast, we have absolutely beautiful, stunning sunsets. And at least here in San Diego, a lot of people are reporting seeing this green flash that they call it. I don't know if you have that. In Australia, it's when the last second when the sun is when it's dipping in the ocean, and the very, very last second until the last like tiny little piece of sun goes under the ocean, it kind of flashes in this green-ish kind of a color. I haven't seen it myself, but my husband did, and lots of our friends have seen it, especially those who live right by the coast. On the very clear day, it's quite quite a common thing here. But after that, it gets dark so fast.
Yeah,
I don't know that. I mean, there's nothing glowing in it.
Well, I live in a place that's got beautiful red rock faces and like kind of African savanna kind of stuff where, you know, golden grass and sparsely placed trees against beautiful red hills. And so, yeah, once the sun goes down and I wait 15 minutes and then all the red hills just glow this beautiful rich red, and the grass kind of reflects the last of the sun, so it just this beautiful soft yellow, and then the tree trunks kind of glow in the dark, and then it gets dark really quickly after that. So,
You will love Sedona. You will love Sedona if you haven't yet researched that area. It's a small town in Arizona with red rocks, hills and valleys. It's just absolutely amazing. It's especially in the during the sunset. It's just the colors are so rich, and you will love that. Again, if you're coming here, I'll take you to Sedona.
It's on my to-do list, most definitely.
Wow. Okay. You mentioned ceramics. I have to ask you about ceramics.
Yeah. Okay. So ceramics sort of became my COVID project, I guess. Uh-huh. So I was supposed to be studying my master's in art at the start of 2020, and then the COVID lockdowns started. Yeah. And most of the universities changed to online, but the art lecturer said, we need to mold and create our artists face-to-face. So my master's basically got cancelled, and then I thought, what can I do? So I was in the zone. I was ready to start learning again. And I just enrolled myself in some ceramics classes. I did it. I didn't, you know, I hadn't done anything with it for 25 years. So I enrolled myself back into some art short classes, and I love ceramics. And I was living in a place, I'm used to living in the bush, so no houses, lots of birds, lots of trees. And then I got stuck in a city with no birds, so I started to make birds, basically, so that, because I missed the birds where I was, and then it just kind of snowballed from that. I have a little ceramic studio, I have a kiln, and I've spent all day glazing today, and I've got the kilns on now, so a couple of days waiting for that. So
so you're making birds?
Well, no, at the moment I'm actually making Anzac poppies. So
what?
Poppy flowers. In Australia, we have Anzac Day coming up, which is commemorative of all the soldiers that have died in war, and they've sort of adopted the poppies as symbolic of the ending of war and a memorial flower. The Northern Territory, Darwin, is very much a military town. So I've been making poppies for Anzac Day. So they're in the kiln now.
I see. Wow. Yeah. I wish to see them. If you can share some of the photos that I can use for the show notes for this episode, that would be amazing. Yeah. Wow. Well, oh my God. We are almost at the top of the hour. I feel really
that's gone by quickly.
It's been 45 minutes already. And normally I would not rush anyone. I feel really bad that you are staying up so late talking to me, but I am so grateful for this amazing journey that you took me out to, because I just cannot describe to you what's going on in my head while you were explaining all those little things and the details of your research and the flights and all the areas that you were photographing and oh my God, what are you doing with Karandashes? I'm going to try that. I mean, this is brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant. Tanya, thank you so much. A very quick question for you. How do people find you online?
I was updating my website specifically for the exhibition. So I'm a little bit behind because...
By the time this episode is going to be out.
My website hopefully will be up very shortly. Online, and then Instagram's fairly up to date. I don't have Facebook, but I do have Instagram, and it's fairly up to date. I'm getting better at maintaining that.
Do you want to spell it out? Your Instagram and Facebook and your website?
Yeah, well, my Instagram is I'm at @TM_art_photo.
Very easy.
And then my website is TanyaMalkinPhotographic.art.
.art. Okay.
I prefer to call myself a photographic artist rather than a photographer.
That makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And anyway, for everybody who are like me, who is not very audible on that kind of stuff, I will put all the links in the show notes. And if by then Tanya will have any current exhibitions, at the time this episode is out, it all will be in the show notes. So you guys go out there. Oh my God, just go and check her Instagram. Just do it. After you have just heard, knowing how much goes into producing this beautiful work, just go and give her some love. Okay. and if you like this episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe on the platform where you're listening. I will really appreciate that. Keep up with more amazing stories in the art scene. And that's it. We'll see you again in the art scene. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
It has been another episode of In the Art Scene podcast. If you liked today's conversation, please give us a good review on Apple and go listen to other great stories. Check out our website intheartscene.com or follow us on Instagram @intheartscene for more content. If you are a creative and you want to share your story, shoot us a message from the website or DM us on Instagram. Look forward to seeing you next time in the art scene.